Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk Podcast, brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. I am Pat Boyle with Charlie Romeliotis from NBC Sports Chicago.com. How are you doing?
How's it going, Pat?
Doing all right. We are in the about the midway point of the preseason schedule, zeroing in on the opening night. Let's talk about, I think, probably the biggest surprise so far, and that would be this past year's first-round pick, Adam Boqvist, a right-handed shooting defenseman who, A, we were sort of surprised right away that he was signed, but they wanted to keep better tabs on him. Then they decided that the London Knights would be in his future. And then with his play, coupled with the injury situations right now with Connor Murphy and whatnot, that Adam Boqvist has turned some heads, and for now, he's still in audition mode and has a shot at making this roster. How surprised are you?
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because the London Knights season starts today. We're recording this on Friday. So he's not going to be part of the first couple games there, I guess, because it sounds like, well, he's not going to play in the preseason game tonight. So Boqvist is going to get some preseason action at home at the United Center next week. So, I mean, it's interesting because I never thought of this possibility where he could play, you know, he might start the year with the Blackhawks and he could play up to 9 games this season before he burns the first level of his entry-level deal. I don't think it's going to get that far, but the Blackhawks did this with Ryan Hartman. They did it in 2014-15, I believe, was his first year. And then they did it again the next year where he played in 5 games and then 3 games. And his first full rookie season wasn't until his third year. So I maybe can envision a scenario where Adam Boqvist does the same, where he plays up to, you know, whatever, up to 9 games or might be 5 or whatever. Then they send him back to London for the full year. But I don't see him sticking around for the full 82, although it's interesting because I never really thought of this possibility for him.
So he played with Brandon Manning in Detroit last night. Q gave him favorable reviews after the Columbus game. He gave him favorable reviews after the Detroit game. Look, he's an undersized guy with a lot of offensive skill. It's amazing how he can pack so much power into a shot with somewhat of a pretty small frame. But, you know, the things he needs to work on. I talked to our guy, Brian Campbell, to break, kind of get the defenseman's take on him. Look, he needs confidence like every young player does. He needs to work on his defensive zone coverage like every young guy does. And I think you saw that in Detroit last night. I rewatched the first period where, you know, he made some good plays, and then he also had to get back in position after not making a great play. But I think they like what they see so far. It's really going to be interesting, you know, because Joel's all about trust. And it would really shock me if both Joki Haru and Boqvist could make the team and be on that ice opening night. That would stun me.
Right, and you don't. It's so unlike, I don't want to say it's unlike the Blackhawks, because they want to take their time with these defensemen. But maybe this is good for his development if he were. But the thought of them breaking both of them in at the same time is like, because now we were mapping out all these scenarios about how Joki Haru is going to make the team without being in that rotation for as a seventh defenseman, because they want to get him playing.
Right.
So if you add Boqvist to the mix, like who are your defensemen sitting out? Like is it Brandon Manning? Is it Jan Ruda? Like Connor Murphy is obviously out until, you know, whatever. So that opened the door for Joki Haru to step up in the top 4 role or just in the top 6 in general. So it's going to be interesting to monitor. It's you got two right-handed shot defensemen that are 18 years or not 18 years old and 19 years old. So right. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Well, Charlie, it is also the new NHL. We see young defensemen breaking in seemingly every year. It kind of started with Ekblad a few years ago down in Florida, and we've seen it, you know, we've seen it in Boston. We've seen it everywhere where young players, if the time, the NHL, if the team thinks it's right, they'll give them the opportunity. But like you said here, this situation is uncharted waters for this team to have two at that age to be able to crack a lineup, because as Joel has gone on record, Jokiharju is not going to be your seventh D-man sitting every third night up in the rafters at the United Center. They want him on the ice. So here's my question to you. I mean, do you think both make it?
I think Jokiharju is essentially a lock for me in my head.
Yep.
Boqvist, man. So here's another interesting possibility is whether the Blackhawks put Boqvist in a few games and then send him to London. And if for whatever reason that London season ends early, it's probably not, then they bring him back for the end of the regular season. Do you think that is a possibility, or
just about this was it nine because, games?
Yeah, nine games.
Yeah,
for them.
I mean, yeah, I can see that. I mean,
I think they would want to use. I don't know if they would bring him back over.
He's either ready or he's not, and but I mean, I know there's a plan in place. The original plan was he to go to London, and then I think, like I'd heard some talk that maybe Campbell would go to London every so often to work with him. I mean, they're really going to keep a close eye on him and monitor him. And but if duty calls and they feel he's one of the top six or top seven right now, I still think it's going to be a bit of a long shot for him just because of the numbers. If Jokiharju wasn't in the equation and they weren't already breaking in one 19-year-old, I maybe it might be a different story, but to do two and want to give them significant playing time, it's a lot. So
And it's hard because we've only seen two preseason games. And the first one he was playing in a third pairing role. So yesterday was his first action playing top pairing minutes. So I think I need to see one or two more home games to see what the Blackhawks might be thinking when it comes to whether he would be on the opening day roster.
And as we tape this, Boqvist will not play in Ottawa on Friday night. We will see Jokiharju.
Yes.
Okay, we saw Saad Schmaltz and Kane for the first time together in Detroit. Obviously, they teamed up for that goal early in the second period. Beautiful passing. You know, Mark Lazarus did a story in The Athletic talking about Saad and Kane's past history together. And they were together in the 13-14 season and again in the 14-15 season and played like over 500 minutes together. And the numbers are impressive. Now, Andrew Shaw was the center at that time. Nick Schmaltz brings a completely different skill set than Andrew Shaw does to the table. But as Kane said, he's never played, and I was thinking about it, it's like he really hasn't. He's never played with a center who has speed. It's been the Brad Richards. It's been the Anisimovs.
Michael Hanzus.
Michael Hanz. I mean, it's always been a slow centerman. So this is the first time he's dealing with speed. And then Saad brings this more of a north-south style. But it's interesting. I guess I'm beginning to keep an open mind about this and think that this possibly could work. I think the way the players that were being talked to, Saad Schmaltz and Kane, they were talking about very glowingly, like you would expect in a preseason situation before really anything happened on the ice. They think it can be a dynamic line. I'm open to it. So far, okay. So far, so good. Where do you stand?
Yeah, I agree. I'm open to it as well. And the only reason I wouldn't be open to it is because I'm still unsure of that first line with Jonathan Toews is with Kunitz and DeBrincat. I'm not sure if that's like that. That line was pretty quiet yesterday in the preseason
game. It was very quiet. But here's what I said, and I've said it. I said it repeatedly. Stop worrying about Toews. Stop. I mean, that's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's a big boy.
I'm more so thinking of balance purposes.
Yeah, I understand.
Like,
I understand.
If you wanted to put DeBrincat with Schmaltz and Kane, you know, Toews would still be fine with Brandon Saad.
Well, look, we've said that repeatedly. Joel does not seem to be.
At the end of the day, Charlie,
if he didn't do it at the end of last year when those games meant nothing, why wouldn't you have experimented then? And he didn't do it.
Yeah.
So, again, when we talk about people changing, you know, these are like areas where I think like this is where the coaching staff change a little bit, see where it goes. I know they're worried about the size and the lack of defensive presence on that line if DeBrincat goes there. But if I look at what has gone on and what's transpired, he didn't do it when he had ample opportunity at the end of last year when it was an audition for everybody. He hasn't done it in the preseason this year. If you ain't going to do it those two times, you're not going to break it out in late October or November when your playoff chances are hanging in the balance. Or maybe you do because you're desperate. I don't know.
Right. Well, yeah, I've kind of moved on from that idea, but it needs to be revisited if the Saad Schmaltz Kane line is not working.
True.
And neither is the Jonathan Toews line with Kunitz and DeBrincat. So, again, like you said, I'm open-minded to it. I kind of broke this down a few days ago about how the dynamic is going to work with Saad and Schmaltz and Kane because, Kane and I kind of mentioned in the pieces of how Kane and Panarin played off of each other because they're on opposite wings and they would just throw each other cross-ice passes and one of them would skate it into the zone and it was always one of them carrying it into the zone and Anisimov just went straight to the net. So it's different where I think Kane said this in the piece too, where now you got Schmaltz is taking the puck up the ice flying through the neutral zone and then he can feed Kane or whatever. So then when you get into the offensive zone, that's when the cycle starts. Like even yesterday when they scored the goal, it was Saad was at the center. It was Schmaltz feeding it to Saad
right
in the middle of the ice and then Saad feeding Kane. So I think that could work if they're cycling in the offensive zone like Kane and Panarin did, where they're playing off of each other and Saad is playing in the front of the net.
Yeah.
I think it'll work. And that's why I'm open-minded to it as long as – and if that works, like if that's the line and that's – they generate scoring chances and they're dominating puck possession and they're getting their results, then I don't care what's happening around them because we saw it with the Bruins last year where they had one dominant line and it didn't matter what anyone else was doing.
So we're on the same page there. The Kunitz, Toews, DeBrincat line, like my biggest question when I saw it the first day of training camp, number one, I thought that's very cute. You know, Chris Kunitz, established veteran. We know he can play on any line, but let's be honest, at his age, he's a third or fourth line guy, more than likely. He was up there because of status, and that's what Joel does. You know, I'm not going to put Sakura or whoever up there who hasn't, quote-unquote, earned that opportunity. So he goes with the four-time Stanley Cup winner. Okay, I get it. But once you get down to watching this group on the ice, who's going to go get the puck? Who's going to be the guy to retrieve the puck? Because I look at that group and I don't see that player. Your thoughts initially as you've seen it now, and again, it's a small sample size in a game, but we've been able to watch it at MB Ice Arena.
Right. I mean, it's got to be Toews right now.
You
know, but he's got a lot of other things to worry about than – you know, he's always going to be that hard-nosed guy that goes into the corners and he's going to be that net front presence. But, you know, I agree. And I think as the week went on, we kind of talked to Joel about the Kunitz up there. And it sounded like he's just up there temporarily. Like he's not, I think he's going to have a
placeholder.
Exactly. And I think Dylan Sakura is a guy that he's kind of gushed about during training camp. And I think we could see him stepping into that first line role with Toews and DeBrincat. And then the lines will kind of even out where you'll see Kunitz with Anisimov and Aidsel. But yeah, I mean, whatever. Try it out. See if you don't want to. I think also a part of it is you don't want to thrust Sakura or whoever into this big role right from the start and make it seem like, well, this is where we expect you to be
right
all year. You know, like you want to ease them into that into that top six role. So I don't mind it from the start, because I just don't think we're going to see a lot of it. I think it's going to change quickly.
Like, we're already, I don't know, 15 minutes or so into this podcast, and we're talking about the kind of the fragility of inserting these young guys in. I mean, that never have I, in the 6-7 years I've been on this beat, talked about so many young guys and how the team was going to blend them into the lineup. I mean, it really, you know,
like all over the
lineup. All over the place, right? I mean, it's at
forward,
it's on the back
D,
end,
goalie.
Yeah, and it's like crucial spots. So it really is an interesting time for this team. Hey, one of the lines that stood out yesterday was David Camp's line. He was out there with Luke Johnson and Entwistle.
Yeah, he had a great shot.
And David Camp is that guy who's on that, like, kind of that fifth line situation, but I think he's going to be your every third or fourth night. He's going to get an opportunity to break into the lineup the Martinsons, the Cahoons. We'll put Johnson in there. Camp, you know, who has stood out to you from what you've seen at practice and in the scrimmages and then in the limited two preseason games?
Yeah, I would say Cahoon sticks out to me as a guy that is a versatile player. Like, he's a speedy guy. He's crafty. He's also got that, I think we talked about it in the last podcast, but he's got something in the European clause where if he doesn't make the Blackhawks out of camp, he can get sent back to Europe. So maybe there's like a little bit more incentive for the Blackhawks to kind of keep him around. I don't think that's why they would keep him around, because I do think he's one of the camp standouts. But the Hawks also made a few reassignments today to Rockford, and Entwistle was one of them.
Okay.
But I think it's telling, because they're keeping Johnson around, and I think Johnson is also a guy that might get a pretty good look this year. Maybe not at the start of the opening day, but he could be probably one of the first call ups. So I think that line as a whole has been pretty solid.
Well, let's update the Corey Crawford situation. I'll throw it to you. You're there this morning. He was on the ice again. Give me the number of days. I know there was two scheduled off days that he's had. So is it like 6 of 8 or 7 of 9 that he's been on the ice?
Well, so we were under the impression that he had taken the Saturday of training camp festival off, but that got disputed by Joel Quenneville. He said he was on the ice for 6 straight days.
Okay.
So Wednesday he was on the ice, and we were there kind of watching. And in between drills, he looked like he was, you know, he kept going back to to talk with Mike Gapsky, the head athletic trainer, and then he would go do another drill, and then he would go back, and it ended after 20 minutes. So it was pretty, it seemed a little bit alarming, and then we talked to Joel afterwards, and he said, don't read anything into it. It was a scheduled, abbreviated on-ice session, and then he had yesterday off. Today he returned to the ice, and it was he was out there for about 35 minutes, so that was encouraging. So didn't see any alarming signs this time around. So, you know, I'll take Joel Quenneville for his word for it. He looked good out there. The intensity in some of the drills are changing. Like, he hasn't taken high shots yet. They're still keeping him low. They just want to get his conditioning out there, make him feel the puck, whatever. But today he was doing some puck handling drills, and he was kind of upping the intensity around the crease and whatever. So I still think he's making baby steps towards returning to maybe practice soon, but I still think we might be a little bit a ways away.
Yeah, here's the thing. If you're, you know, monitoring this as a Blackhawks fan, the way I would look at it is, you know, they're looking to see if there's any symptoms that come after working out. So if you see him string together 2 and 3 consecutive days, and even they say a scheduled off day and he's back the next, that tells me that when his heart rate's getting up there, when he is, and we see he gets fatigued pretty quickly in it's been almost a year.
Yeah, and not only that, he missed out on a whole summer of training.
Right,
like,
right.
It's like guys that go through, not just with a head injury, it's just guys with, they have surgery on their knee or their foot, whatever, and they it takes them a long time to get their conditioning back because they can't.
But sometimes they're on a stationary bike or I don't know how much he wasn't able to do any of that. So now you're seeing him, you know, work on the cardio and on ice. And I think, again, if you see him out there stacking days, that tells me that they're comfortable, that they haven't seen any symptoms that are alarming to say, whoa, we got to pull back.
Right. And even that abbreviated session on Wednesday, you know, we were kind of like, hey, what was that about? When we asked Joel afterwards, and he said, oh, he was fine. Like, that was part of the schedule. And he even worked out afterwards. So that was, you know, encouraging to hear, too, if that was the case and things went well there. So, yeah, it doesn't seem like we should be worrying about that quite yet.
On the Connor Murphy front, it's now been up to, what, 12 weeks?
Yeah, 12 weeks. He's going to be off the ice for six. So they're going to reevaluate, I think, after this six-week period, see if he can get on the ice. But yeah, it seems like December might be a good return date, which is, that's difficult because that's usually the time where you know whether you're a contender or not, you know, so that's going to be difficult to bring him back into the lineup. I think, what is it, November or Thanksgiving is a good point to if you're in, you're probably in. If you're out, you're probably out.
I hate to be like, I'm Connor Murphy. I'm not a huge Connor Murphy fan. I think he's a great guy. He might be excellent in the room. To me, he's a fifth or sixth at best. He's not going to be the difference of you making the playoffs or not. And to me, this gives opportunity to younger guys who are more talented, who probably have a better skill set for this NHL. It's going to open some spots for them. Because, you know, that was the issue we were at, you know, the log jams. And we got Forsling coming back
in November.
So, you know, those are the guys I want to see getting opportunities. I kind of think I know what Connor Murphy is, and I'm kind of like okay with that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I like Murphy, but not in the top four. Or maybe he's not getting paid like it. Like, I think you need a Connor Murphy.
Oh, yeah, he's getting paid. No, you're right. He's getting paid. He's getting paid like a four.
Yeah.
Three, four guy.
And you need a player like that, like to provide some physicality on the back end, whatever. Maybe just not in the role that you would envision him being in.
Yeah. We're not pinching and giving up odd man rushes the other way. Quickly, Joki Haru. We touched on it off the top. I've almost been a little more impressed with Boqvist than Joki Haru at times. So,
yeah.
What were your thoughts on just what you've seen from Joki Haru and how comfortable do you think you're going to be seeing him in the starting lineup on opening night?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they slot him because we always kind of penciled him in with Duncan Keith, but like now I could see him on a roll and the bottom pairing roll with Erik Gustafsson if things. You know, I don't know. It seems like Keith and Seabrook might start out on the top line.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe bet.
And then Brandon Manning and Jan Ruda might be the two, the three and four. So it might be Gustafsson and Joki Haru at the third as a third pairing. But one thing that does stick out to me about Joki Haru is his confidence. Like he's a very confident player, and even during the scrimmages and like I'm sitting there watching, and he's one of the defensemen that is screaming like to communicate with his defenseman, and I think that shows a lot about his confidence, because usually you can be a little bit more reserved when you're getting thrust into this role and you're playing with all these veterans, and you know you just tend to go about your business in a quiet manner. But he's taking control and he's communicating on the ice, and he's not afraid to pinch and play his style. So I think that's the one encouraging aspect of his game. No matter whether he has some. No matter what he has to work on, when we see opening day roll around.
Let's quickly touch on the power play. They've been working on that at MBI Arena. We saw the 1-3-1 look on the power play where they put two forwards in the circles, a D-man usually at the top of the umbrella, and two forwards who rotate between the paint and the high slot area. The units, which you wrote about on NBCSportsChicago.com, the units that we saw initially were Kane Schmaltz, Taves, DeBrincat, and Keith on Unit 1. And on Unit 2, it was Kunitz, Saad, Sakura, Aitzel, and Gustafsson. I would like Gustafsson and Keith to switch, and maybe they were deferring to the veteran there to not cause any, you know, friction when it's not needed. But I have no problem loading up like that. I actually really like that group. But I really think that man at the top, in this case Keith, and on the other unit Gustafsson, I think that they are almost the the catalyst to the group, because you have to have great vision, know when to reverse the puck, and you need to put that one-timer on a platter to, in this case, Kane or DeBrincat, and you got to do it quickly. So it's and then you have to be quick enough to get back if a shot is blocked, doesn't get through, and an odd man rush develops the other way. You need to have the speed to get back.
Right. Yeah, I really like the idea of loading up the first unit, because when we watched the Washington Capitals in the playoffs, and even when I watched the Pittsburgh Penguins, like Crosby, Malkin, Kessel, they're all out there for seemingly the full 2 minutes, and they seemingly always get a goal. Now, I know they've got a lot of firepower over there in Pittsburgh, but the idea of just load up your best offensive players, just keep them out there for two. If you're in the zone for 2 minutes and you don't get a goal, if you're still in the zone for 2 minutes, you generated chances.
Right.
You know, like
right.
you, there's momentum there.
Right.
So.
And let's face it, they're cycling. They're in there. You know, it's not like penalty killing minutes either. You know,
right.
Like if you're dominant and you have the puck in the offensive zone, seemingly you're not skating 200 feet.
Exactly.
Think about it from a, you know, you want your best offensive players on the ice with an advantage to them. And with one less player out there, why wouldn't you of a 2 minute power play? And how many times do we see power plays end up like a 140 situation? Why not let them play a solid minute, maybe a skosh over that, and take back from their minutes somewhere else when there isn't that advantage? I'm okay with that. Like, this NHL is different, man. It's tough to score 5-on-5. I documented it in a little piece I wrote, that the final four teams in the NHL all were in the top 11. The Knights were 11th in power play production. Washington, Tampa, and Winnipeg, right?
Yeah.
Nashville.
Vegas and, we're blanking. Yeah, wait.
In Winnipeg.
Was it Winnipeg?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Winnipeg beat Nashville. What do you mean?
Winnipeg beat, Vegas and Winnipeg.
Am I right?
Yeah. I think you're right.
Okay.
Anyway.
and they were all in the top 10 with Vegas being 11th. So it's not by accident. And I have no problem loading up.
Yeah, and it's a similar structure. This 1-3-1 is basically the exact same structure the Capitals ran last year during their – and I think this is what the Blackhawks are going for, because now when they were practicing it, like the Capitals like to use TJ Oshie in the slot, and they just kind of fire it to him, and he just releases that quick snapshot. It didn't seem like the Blackhawks were practicing that a lot with Schmaltz, but it's an option if – Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews wanted to feed Schmaltz right there, and DeBrincat can serve as Alex Ovechkin with that one-timer from the left faceoff circle, and then Kane and Toews can play off of each other and kind of rotate back and forth, and then you got Duncan Keith at the top who can fire a slap shot, and you got two people technically in front of the net. You got Schmaltz in the slot, and then you got Toews, screening the goalie. So it's interesting. Listen, all I know is whatever they did last year did not work, so this cannot be any worse than what they had last year.
Absolutely. And by the way, it was Winnipeg and Vegas, yes.
Having a big brain fart
there. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, also, I wanted really quick, Noah Nisimov on any others, he led the team in power play goals last year. We talked to Joel about that, and it seems like if Nisimov were to get in there, Kunitz would probably get swapped out. He kind of said, we'll see if Cooney stays there, and you know, Anisimov might the hockey nickname of Cooney.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, Anisimov obviously would probably get in there for the second unit.
We'll say PK talk to a future podcast. Let's wrap things up here with over the next few days, what roster battle are you going to be focused on? We didn't touch on. Let's quickly go goaltender.
Sure.
Cam Ward, Anton Forsberg, thoughts on what you've seen, and Delia as well.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Cam Ward and Anton Forsberg, but I thought Forsberg was pretty good yesterday. I need to see more of Forsberg in situations where he gives up a goal that he probably should have had.
I thought he should have had the first one.
Okay. Oh, the
The redirection.
Redirection. Right.
On the power play.
Yeah.
I think it snuck
underneath
under the left armpit, so to speak. Yeah, I mean, look, it was a good redirection, but it was from that kind of the high slot. It wasn't like a redirection in the paint, and I don't know. I thought, you know, that's one to me that those are the difference in, you know, kind of those 10 points that get you in the playoffs and the 10 points that don't. A goal like that, to me, is the one that, like, that's the one Corey 9 times out of 10 stops, and it's last year the goal that, you know, 6 out of 10 times went in.
Right. I mean, yeah, Forsberg got yanked 6 times last year in, what, like 25 starts? Like, that percentage is pretty bad. So I need to see how he responds in situations like that where he should have had it. Well, it's like you got to forget about what just happened. Like, you got to bounce back, because those always compounded, and he always allowed the second and third goal fairly quickly. So I think it's going to be Forsberg as the backup to start the year. I'm still interested to see what happens when Crawford returns, because Forsberg is a guy that might get claimed on waivers, but then he would also be a really good he would be really good in Rockford with Colin Delia and them just duking it out. But I do like Kevin Lankinen, by the way. I think he's going to be a pretty solid player developing in Rockford this year with Colin Delia. I think they might split starts.
Do you think I mean, Lankinen stole the show at the festival, stopping 2-1 two cross crease.
Yeah, one-timers.
One-timers, yeah. Basically. So right now, if you had to forecast who you think will have the better career, Delia or Lankinen?
I'd probably say Lankinen.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. But I do think Colin Delia is very – he's mentally tough. You need that in a goaltender.
Right.
But I like Lankinen. Lankinen, I think, is tough as well, but I think he's very structurally sound.
Okay, quickly, the roster battles that you're going to be focusing on, give me two, basically, over the next handful of days.
I'm really looking for the 13th forward. Like, who's going to be the 13th forward? Is it going to be Kampf? Is it going to be Cahoon? Is it going to be a young guy like Luke Johnson? Because I know, like, when we were talking about defensemen,
Do you think Martinson is a lock?
Yeah, I do.
Marty, as Q like to call. Yeah,
I think
you liked him in the playoffs last year, in the Calder Cup playoffs.
Yeah,
you could kind of tell that he had an upper hand at heading into training camp.
Yes, for sure. So, and we always talk about when we're talking about defensemen, you don't want a young guy to be that seventh defenseman because you want him playing those minutes. But I'm not sure that that'll be the case, because I think if you do put a Kampf or a Cahoon or a Johnson as your, or even a Matthew Highmore as your 13th forward, like, you can rotate him in and out with Marty and whoever you want. So I think there's room there to rotate in and out.
Yeah, I'm going to be focusing on the Boqvist situation. It's been the surprise so far. We'll see him after they play Ottawa. He won't play in that game. And then what's the next preseason game?
They return home. What is it? Tuesday, I think. Yeah, Tuesday against Detroit. Yeah, because they're off tomorrow.
Yeah, Tuesday against Detroit.
Yeah, they're off tomorrow. They practice on Sunday and Monday.
Yep. The final three, it goes Detroit on Tuesday, Ottawa on Thursday, and Columbus next Saturday. Those are all at the United Center. So we'll probably see, you know, that game against Detroit Tuesday is a huge one for Boqvist, because, as you said, the London Knights season's already underway, and they'll probably make their decision for his immediate future right after that game. So I'll be focused on that. And I'm also going to be focused on the Taves line. And do I see some momentum from that group heading in? Because I think it's important. As I said, my priority is finding the right situation for Kane, and then with the remaining forwards, figuring out who's the best fit for Taves.
Right. Yeah, because if that second line doesn't work out, then you have to move Saad away and probably put him with Taves, and then it's like, oh, we got to find our left winger for Kane and Schmaltz.
By the way, okay, so I get this from texters, tweeters, the Twitter machine. Sometimes we get it, you know, via email or a voicemail. First line, second line, or naming it by Kane or Taves. So here's the thing. Let's you know, because Johnny has been here forever and he has been seemingly the number one line, it kind of just has stayed with him. There's no question since, the Panarin couple years that the Kane line has been the number one line seeing more minutes. I mean, right?
Yeah, so, that's the line getting
But then sent. people go, well, you can't name a line after the winger. I'm like, you can if it's Patrick Kane.
You
can. So like,
you think Washington calls it the Backstrom line?
Yeah,
and not
right,
Ovechkin?
Right. So it's like the unwritten rules of baseball. These are the unwritten rules of hockey. We need to figure out as an NBC Sports Chicago team how we want to label. Because when you say the second line, I know what you mean. But in reality, that second line is the Taves line.
Right,
so we need to – well, we'll figure that out. We got plenty of time for that. And we got some big news to drop on you next week, okay?
Yes.
I'm giving you a little hint to stay tuned. We're going to have a big announcement next week. Real excited about that. But that'll do it for the latest edition of the Hawks Talk podcast. For Charlie Romeliotis, I'm Pat Boyle. Thank you for listening. And thanks to our Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers for bringing it to you. Go Hawks.
Go Raiders.